Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Before we get into the episode, I just wanted to share some exciting news. I'm in the process of developing an app which includes a free protein tracking tool. Similar to other apps where you can track your protein, carbohydrates, fats, and calories, my version of this app will be for protein only. And the reason for this is because over the years, so many of my clients and myself really just wanted to know how much protein we were getting each day, because protein is the number one nutrient or food group where most of my clients are falling short, and the number one nutrient to make sure we're getting optimal amounts of, especially as we move past 40. But a lot of my clients didn't want to see their calories or track other macros at the same time. Some said that it could be quite triggering because they were brought up, you know, in the typical dieting era of the 80s and 90s, and they maybe had a history of being obsessed with calories, and this is something that they just didn't want to have to look at every day. So many people asked, is there just a way that I can track protein only? So I'm hoping to answer this problem with my app. And in November, I'm looking for as many people as possible who'd be willing to test it out over a period of about 2 weeks and provide feedback. And then we'll continue to develop the app based on your feedback. And it should hopefully be ready to go live in early 2025. So if tracking your daily protein intake is something that's important to you, which I really hope it is, and you'd be interested in testing out the app in November, then you can sign up to be a beta tester via the link that I'll put in the show notes. You can also find this link in my Instagram bio if you're following me over there. Okay, now on to the episode. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. With me, your host, Francesca. So in last week's episode, I focused on progesterone as being the first hormone that starts to change as a woman moves into perimenopause in the sort of early stages. That's the first sort of characteristic of perimenopause, and changes to estrogen actually come a little bit later, which is what we're talking about in this episode. So if you haven't yet listened to the previous episode, which is episode 9, I think, that is all focused on progesterone, how it's the first hormone to start changing and it declines, what the impact of that is. And then obviously you can still listen to this one before you listen to that one, but do make sure you listen to that one as well, because it will just make more sense when the two are combined. So today we'll discuss estrogen's role in the symptoms, the challenges, situations associated with perimenopause, and what you can do to support that so that you can start to minimize those symptoms and issues, because that's the beauty of this work that I do and why I do it, is that we can minimize the typical symptoms, the typical challenges associated with perimenopause. And, you know, there's this huge market out there today for perimenopause supplements, menopause supplements. So many supplement companies have jumped on that bandwagon. And that can be, you know, of course, there's a place for certain very good quality supplements to complement other things that a person might be doing. But really and truly, nothing trumps the habits that you have, lifestyle wise, nutrition wise. Those are the absolute foundations, and that's the place to start. And then really good quality supplementation can be the cherry on top. So that's what I really want to kind of get into today. Obviously, I talked about progesterone in the last episode and how we can support, because even though progesterone levels are naturally declining, which is what, you know, perimenopause is a natural physiological state that we move into hormonally. And whilst those things are natural, we can support them so that, for example, progesterone levels don't decline as much or don't decline as early, or, you know, we can just keep progesterone levels healthy as we possibly can by intervening with, for example, nutrition and lifestyle habits that support it, that support its production, than if we hadn't intervened. So we can leave things alone and just let nature take its course, which is fine, but we may suffer in ways that we don't necessarily need to if we do step in and say, right, let me learn what I can do to support this, what's going on, and then what I can do to support it. And then I'll do those things. And you can have a much better experience. And that is definitely what I'm here for. I want to make sure that my perimenopause experience and my transition into menopause, when that time comes, is as smooth as it can possibly be. And that I don't have any of the sort of, you know, dreaded things that we do hear about that a lot of women unfortunately do experience. So we'll discuss today what's going on with estrogen, how it's contributing to certain symptoms, and then what we can do to minimize that. Now, a common misconception about perimenopause is that as soon as a woman moves into it, she has low estrogen. I hear that all the time. You know, my estrogen must be low if I'm perimenopausal, or I can't be perimenopausal because my estrogen isn't low yet. Maybe they've had it tested and, you know, it's not shown as low. So they say, oh, I'm not perimenopausal yet. So again, it's that misconception that perimenopause means low estrogen. But hopefully by now, if you've listened to a few of my previous episodes, you understand that that's not the case, and that estrogen only really becomes consistently lower in the later stages of perimenopause, which is late 40s. So in previous episodes, I've gone through the various stages of perimenopause that we move through, which is about 10 years or more. So hopefully now you do understand that. So yes, we get points in our menstrual cycle, which we're going to have right up until maybe just a year before actually reaching menopause. We get points in our cycle when estrogen drops really low, but it's still throughout perimenopause, but it's still fluctuating pretty erratically. And the overall, so if you were to kind of average out your actual overall genuine level of estrogen across the month, you might find, which is quite hard to quantify because you'd have to test every day, maybe multiple times a day, but you might actually find that you've got normal levels. So it won't be consistently genuinely low until late 40s. That's, you know, for most women. Perimenopause starts with high and fluctuating estrogen, and it ends with low levels, and it gets consistently lower late 40s, and then eventually there's none. Now, obviously, this doesn't speak for every single woman. There can be other physiological reasons why a woman may well have consistently low, genuinely low estrogen much earlier than this. Things like significant ongoing stress, some kind of illness or treatment. So, for example, cancer treatment can put a person into a consistently low estrogen state, you know, at any age, way before this late stage of perimenopause. If somebody is suffering with ovarian insufficiency, but I'm talking about the average woman going through perimenopause who isn't experiencing these kind of things. So let's just recap the early stage of perimenopause so that we can see where things start to shift with regards to estrogen and the symptoms that it brings. So the very early stage of perimenopause would be from about 38 to early 40s, give or take. This is the stage where progesterone is starting to decline. So we're making less of it or none of it some months as we start to have more what we call non-ovulatory cycles or anovulatory cycles, which are cycles where they may look normal on paper. You have your period at the end of it and so on, but you haven't actually managed to ovulate halfway through the cycle, which is how we make progesterone. So once this starts to happen, as I said, from sort of 38 to early 40s, we might start to notice very subtle changes related to the nervous system, so the brain and the stress response system in the body, like very mild changes in mood, fleeting anxiety, maybe some irritability, subtle changes to things like our confidence, how sociable we feel, how outgoing we feel, maybe subtle changes to our ability to sleep at night, fall asleep or stay asleep. And there's usually no changes to the menstrual cycle at this stage. Although, as I said, we are having more anovulatory cycles, we might at this point, we're not necessarily noticing any actual changes to lengths or symptoms associated with the cycle. Then we'll move into early perimenopause, which is around early to mid 40s. So now we have the dropping progesterone, but we also have estrogen levels remaining sort of normal, optimal, high, whatever you want to call it. So kind of just estrogen levels remaining as they were, or they can also be getting higher than they've ever been before. So we're sometimes seeing in early to mid 40s, we're seeing our estrogen levels spike very high, like two or three times higher than they've ever been, you know, than levels have ever been in your body before. And so that situation of low progesterone and now possibly higher estrogen than ever before can start to cause possibly shorter menstrual cycles, maybe by about 5 days, give or take. So mine, for example, were always 28 days, like clockwork through my 20s and 30s. And as I moved past 40 or 41, they've gradually gone down from 28 days to 27 to 26. And now they're 25. I'm almost 45. And now I'm having 25-day cycles. And also the flow starts to become much heavier, often with flooding or clotting. That's definitely been my experience. I've never been someone suffering with heavy periods. They've always been pretty normal to me. But again, in the last two or so years, especially, yeah, I'd say the last year or two, they have become noticeably much heavier, again, with some flooding and clotting. So that's usually due to the low progesterone and now the fact that we're having higher estrogen levels than ever before. Then we move into mid to late perimenopause, which would be from about mid to late 40s, so around 45 upwards. So this will be me. I'll be 45 in a few months, so I'll be moving into this mid to late perimenopause phase, but the mid phase until I'm in my late 40s. And here, estrogen levels are now fluctuating quite wildly. So it's very erratic. So instead of this kind of more gentler ebb and flow that we might have seen in our 30s and maybe still by our early 40s, we're now definitely starting to experience this sort of roller coaster, erratic roller coaster nature of estrogen. And it gets more erratic as time goes on as well, as the years, the months and years roll by in our 40s. So at the high spike points of the roller coaster, that's when estrogen can really, again, spike up to two to three times higher than it's ever been before. And then we get these drops hitting really low levels. And it's ups and downs kind of over and over again. And that situation can bring basically symptoms of high and low estrogen all in one go. So usually we start to see, experience neurological sort of brain related symptoms from this up and down nature. It's like, whoa, the brain just can't kind of, you know, the brain and the nervous system just can't get a handle on what's going on here, because one minute it's high, one minute it's low. And it can bring things like brain fog, issues with memory, cognition issues, focus, concentration, brain fatigue as well, hot flushes, night sweats, vaginal dryness as well. So those other ones, the brain fog, cognition stuff, and the hot flushes and night sweats are very much related to like neurological symptoms. And then we can also start to notice vaginal dryness, low or no sex drive. Periods becoming irregular in that the cycle length gets longer now because ovulation is now occurring less and less than it was in the earlier 40 stage. Cycle length can be up to 60 days plus. So this would be more towards the later 40s as opposed to 45 itself, 46 itself. Breast pain, swollen breasts. This is definitely something I suffer with a lot of months. Weight gain, particularly increased belly fat. That's one of the biggest areas for it to be stored. Also perhaps increases in cholesterol and triglycerides if you're doing blood work and you're seeing that on your tests. New allergy symptoms as well can be quite common here. So symptoms related to histamine, new allergies to foods, smells or chemicals. So the kind of typical histamine reactions would be like skin rashes or hives or just like itchy ears, itchy nose, like internally, hay fever like symptoms that you just don't like, you know, you can't explain. They were never there before. So essentially we have estrogen receptors or entry doors to the hormone on more or less every cell in the body. So that means that estrogen is important for every system in the body and that it has far-reaching effects on almost all of our body systems, if not all of them. So therefore, we're going to feel and see the effects of these estrogen swings. So when it's high, when it's low, we're really going to feel that in our brain, in our just bones, in our joints, in our skin. You know, we're just going to feel it everywhere. In our heart as well, in our muscle mass, in our metabolism, even in our gut and our digestive system, that's all impacted by these crazy swings, the highs and the lows, or whether it's high, whether it's low, we're going to be impacted by it. And this, coupled with declining progesterone, is why perimenopause brings the symptoms and challenges that it brings. So let's talk more about the roller coaster, because this is what's responsible for a lot of the typical symptoms. Because, you know, as I said a minute ago, all at once we can have symptoms of high estrogen and low estrogen. And of course, also symptoms of low progesterone. But let's just look at the symptoms of high and low estrogen that we might start to experience all at once. So the highs, so these symptoms are typical of, you know, if someone genuinely has excess estrogen and or if they have high points, various points in the month where it's just really high. So heavy periods, painful periods, breast pain, swollen breasts, headaches, water retention around the body, so kind of feels like bloating, mood swings, anger, irritability, weight gain, belly fat. Then the sharp drops brings the typical symptoms of low estrogen. So hot flushes, night sweats, brain fog, brain fatigue, headaches, migraines, low mood, flat mood, low energy, low libido, low zest for life, low motivation, joint aches and pains, vaginal dryness, weight gain, belly fat. So what we get is this, you know, situation where we're getting both. So later 40s, we're probably getting more so the low estrogen symptoms, because at this point, much later 40s, we may genuinely have low overall levels of estrogen. Whereas the earlier stages, earlier 40s, mid 40s, we've still got high or optimal, let's say, or normal levels of estrogen. We've just got this mad, erratic roller coaster swing. So we can also note that these are also symptoms relating to low progesterone, because low progesterone essentially leaves estrogen what's known as unopposed, or also the term estrogen dominance could be used for this situation, meaning that if we don't make progesterone in the second half of the cycle, because we're now having more non-ovulatory cycles as part of perimenopause, we have a situation where estrogen dominates the entire menstrual cycle. And whether you have genuinely high levels of estrogen or low levels of estrogen, the situation of an estrogen dominant cycle brings the symptoms that I've just mentioned of high estrogen, like heavy flow, breast pain, mood swings, for example. It's just that it can all become more significant when we also have the estrogen roller coaster. So any age, a 25-year-old can be suffering with estrogen dominant cycles and having a really heavy flow, clotting, flooding, breast pain, mood swings. But in perimenopause, it just becomes a little bit more significant because they're also riding this erratic estrogen roller coaster. So we sort of have a double or triple whammy of imbalances going on in perimenopause. But the good news is that, which is why I do the work that I do, and I've said this before, and I'm so passionate about it, is that some simple diet and lifestyle habits can help to taper the highs and lows of the roller coaster. So it's like what I said about progesterone. Yes, we naturally move into perimenopause, and that means that we naturally have more cycles where we don't manage to ovulate. But we can intervene and help support that as much as possible to minimize how low our progesterone goes and how many months we have in a year, for example, where we didn't manage to ovulate. We can minimize that impact and have way more months ovulating than we would have if we didn't intervene. The same can be said for estrogen. If we intervene with our habits, address certain things that can make a big difference, then we can taper the highs and the lows of the roller coaster. If we keep our estrogen levels healthy, for example, and make sure that we're like efficiently breaking down our estrogen, which I'll talk about in a minute, and clearing out of our body every day, and that we're supporting other various things, we can make sure that those highs and lows of the roller coasters just aren't as high and aren't as low, and they don't hit us as hard. So that's the beauty of all of this work. So for example, one of the first things we want to be doing before we look at how to taper the highs and lows of the roller coaster is, of course, making sure that we're supporting the body to ovulate as many months as possible. So if we intervene on that level, we can get more months ovulating than we would have done. And therefore, we make more progesterone than we would have done. And that really helps with the estrogen dominant sort of symptoms that I mentioned, like the really heavy periods, the flooding, the clotting, the breast pain, the mood swings, the headaches. So I've talked about this a lot in episode 9, so I won't go over it again in this episode, but just to know that it is possible to help your body to ovulate more times, more months than it would have otherwise. So please do go back to listen to episode 9, where I talk all about how to encourage ovulation and therefore make progesterone. It's something that I work really hard on myself. And I do track my body temperature every morning, all throughout my cycle, every day, which helps me see whether I have ovulated and therefore made progesterone each month. Because if I get a sustained temperature spike for the last 2 weeks of my cycle, that suggests that I've got progesterone in my system, which increases your body temperature. And I've managed to have this sustained temperature spike every single month, essentially, not every single month, most months over the last sort of 5 years since I turned 40. And I think that's quite good going. And I think that's because I'm intervening. I'm doing things that support my body to achieve that and to make progesterone. There have definitely been a few months, I'd say I can count on one hand in the last few years, how many, like the months where I haven't had a temperature spike at all, and therefore I haven't made progesterone. And I've really felt that in symptoms. So the last 2 weeks of my cycle, I've had horrible issues with sleep, with anxiety, with irritability, with mood issues. And I've thought, if this is how so many women are living more of the time than not, this is really horrible. So it's just the take-home message is to know that we can do things to support our body's ability to ovulate. And those handful of times where I haven't managed to do it, there's always been a reason. I've had a really particularly stressful month the month before, you know, something really awful has happened. There's been a few times over the last few years where that's happened, and that's explained why. And I can say to myself, well, that's okay, because that was a one-off situation that just won't occur again, hopefully, for a long time or ever. So very important that we do support that, and we can, and that's what's really great about this. So go back and listen to episode 9 to learn more about that if you haven't already. And then the other one of the most important things we can do to support the to taper the estrogen roller coaster, the swings from being so high and so low and then impacting our nervous system so intensely, is to support our nervous system all the time, to manage our stress better, to make that a non-negotiable in our life, to put it first. So it's just more important now more than ever. In our 20s and 30s, we could get away with a lot more stress, or and also thinking about all the different forms stress comes in, we could batter ourselves in our 20s and 30s with like crazy exercise classes and, you know, not having much rest, burning the candle at both ends, drinking a lot, going out a lot, staying out late. We could do all that and we were quite resilient. Our hormone landscape was quite resilient. It's just not that resilient in our, as we move into our 40s. And so we do need to make stress management a non-negotiable priority. So the nervous system is impacted by stress, and a dysregulated nervous system increases the likelihood and the severity of a lot of the typical perimenopause symptoms, like the brain fog, the hot flushes, the night sweats, the headaches, the migraines, the weight gain, the belly fat, the sleep issues, the mood issues. All of them are impacted by stress and a dysregulated nervous system, of which stress causes. So again, it's about thinking about all the different forms that stress comes in and consider what applies to your own unique situation, because we all have different stressors. And also certain things, one thing that stresses you might not necessarily be a stressor to somebody else. So we have to, you know, find out what our own unique situation is and see what we can do. So it's financial issues, it's worrying about loved ones, whether it's younger children, older children, teenage children, parents, other family members. You know, we're at ages in our 40s where our parents are probably, you know, not probably, they are aging. So that might bring its own stresses and worries, and, you know, bereavements as well can start to turn up at this stage of life as well. Divorce or separation of any kind, moving house, moving jobs, problems with your career, being unhappy in your career, being unhappy in relationships, being unhappy at home for any reason, yeah, like lots of dependents, lots of commitments, trying to be loads of different roles in one day, every day, past and present traumas, big traumas, small traumas, blood sugar dysregulation. If we're eating in a way that dysregulates our blood sugar, that is a physiological stressor that the brain does pick up on. And even exercise, I mentioned a minute ago, like we could hammer it in our 20s and 30s. We could go to all the spin classes, all the HIIT classes. We could do everything. We could do all the long runs. But it becomes a stressor to our nervous system as we age, you know, especially as we turn 40 and move through that. So those are just to name a few, because modern day stresses are everywhere. Even little things like how often you are showing up on WhatsApp and keeping up with messages, and are you having messages in all these different apps as well? Like, is it Instagram going? Is it Snapchat going? Is there WhatsApp going and emails and Facebook Instant Messenger? You know, all of this is a stress. We might not realize it, but this is a lot going on, and we're dealing with that plus life. So it's just really being aware of what is stressing you out and how can you maybe manage it better? Can you remove certain things, eliminate certain things? Really thinking about your unique situation and how you can possibly make things easier, lighten the load, delegate roles, jobs, ask for help. What is it that you can do? Is it that you do actually need to address, as I mentioned a minute ago, past or present traumas, small traumas, big traumas, situations in your life that you haven't addressed, for example, that you know are probably eating away at you? Is there anything maybe that you need to do there, like start working with a talking therapist or having some somatic therapy, which is something I've, you know, kind of more in recent years been looking into? And what is it? Just kind of figuring out, you know, these are just things for you to think about, just figuring out what it might be that you need to help your life become and feel more easeful. So what we need to be doing as well every day is incorporating certain habits that tell the brain we're safe. So this really, I've talked about this a lot in the cortisol episode. I can't remember what number that was, maybe episode five or six. I talked all about cortisol, the stress response, what's really going on, what cortisol's doing, and how we can manage stress. So go back and listen to the cortisol episode if you haven't already. But yeah, it's really about incorporating habits into your daily life that just become normal, like brushing your teeth, that help to reduce the stress response. They help to tell your brain that you're safe, and therefore that supports your nervous system and can kind of bring us out of this chronically dysregulated nervous system state to a more regulated nervous system state, which really does help to taper that estrogen roller coaster. So things like walking, spending time in nature. So being in any kind of nature, woodland, green space, as much as possible in any way, shape or form throughout your day, sprinkled in throughout your day, taking detours if need be to get into nature, purposefully making an effort to go out and sit somewhere or walk through somewhere. Yoga, so gentle yoga, qigong, tai chi, that kind of mindful movement has a really great positive impact on the brain, tells the brain we're safe. It's a really calming thing to be doing. Deep breathing exercises, so any kind of meditation that you might like to listen to if you use meditation apps, or a simple deep breathing exercise like the 4-6 routine, where you breathe in to a count of four and out to a count of six, very gently through your nose with your mouth closed. Just doing that for 2 to 3 minutes, 2 to 5 minutes a day, or a couple of times a day, can be so impactful and have this compound effect day after day, week on week, month on month. Makes a huge difference. I personally find that spending 5 minutes each morning, I spend the first minute just sitting on the sofa with my feet firmly on the ground, and I just do the 4-6 breathing for about a minute. And then I pick up a notebook or a journal, whatever you want to call it. And I've actually bought a specific journal that asks me a couple of like 3 or 4 questions each morning. And I just answer those questions. And one of them is, what are you grateful for today? And I find that the most powerful question every single morning to think about and just write down. And then one of the questions also says, what do you want today to be? Like, how do you want to feel? How do you want it to, you know, how do you want the day to go? And it's just really lovely to just spend a couple of minutes thinking about those things. So that is personally what I find so powerful, so grounding, so calming. And the fact that the more that I've been doing it every day, like I said, it's a compound effect. The calmer I just feel week on week, month on month. And I know if I took that little practice away, I'd probably start to roll back to the more dysregulated state that I might have been feeling before. The other thing that's really important for tapering the roller coaster, the estrogen roller coaster, and keeping our estrogen levels from, you know, shunting way too high as part of the roller coaster, is to minimize our intake of or exposure to what's known as estrogen mimicking chemicals. These are also known as xenoestrogens, xeno meaning foreign estrogens. They're also known as hormone disrupting chemicals. So lots of different ways to describe the same thing. These are basically chemicals that are found in our environment. So they're found in like plastics, they're found in regular commercial skin care, body care, makeup, fragrances, sprays, candles, air fresheners, plug-ins, and also household cleaning and detergents as well. So these are chemicals that have been shown to sort of look like estrogen, the real estrogen molecule. So they sort of mimic estrogen once they get inside the body, and they can take the place of real estrogen inside the cells in the body. So this situation would cause havoc for the sort of action of our hormones, the way they communicate with each other, and how we break down our hormones, which is something I'm going to talk about next episode or the one after that. And so basically it increases the total load of estrogen. That's what you really need to know for the purpose of this episode. And that exacerbates all of the symptoms mentioned already today with regard to unopposed or excess estrogen. So the estrogen dominant symptoms like the heavy, painful flow, flooding, clotting, breast pain, growth of fibroids. These estrogen mimicking chemicals are huge for those sorts of symptoms. So simple ways to reduce our exposure to these chemicals or like intake of them would be to not use plastic for cooking, heating, storing or drinking. So instead, you know, if you occasionally have to buy a plastic bottle of water, that's fine. But if you're like reusing bottles of water, make it stainless steel. So buy yourself a nice stainless steel bottle. And then when it comes to heating foods, just don't heat foods up in plastic. Empty the foods onto a ceramic plate and heat on that instead. If you're storing foods in the freezer, ideally don't store them in any plastics. Get them stored in ceramic, stainless steel or glass to just minimize the plastic intake of these chemicals. And then as each product runs out, you could gradually look to switch your skincare, your household cleaning, all of your candles and plug-ins and air fresheners, switch them over to clean brands. So there's loads of different brands these days. There's more and more coming out all the time, which is great because it's making the prices more competitive, because these kind of cleaner brands do tend to be more expensive than normal brands. But it really does make a difference. And even if you just, you know, for example, next time your body cream runs out, you switch it for a clean brand and you're now creaming yourself every day with non-chemical, body lotion, think about how many chemicals you're now reducing. So you don't have to go like all overnight, throw everything out and start replacing it all with clean stuff. Just do things one by one. And then when your face cream runs out, do the same thing. When your eye cream runs out, do the same thing. When your deodorant runs out, do the same thing. I do find deodorant the hardest though, must say. I always have a backup, like normal brand for like very hot, sweaty days, because you can't risk that. But again, for the most part, if you're using natural deodorant, that makes a huge difference. And again, just as and when one thing runs out, when your kitchen spray runs out, when your shower gel, just replace it with natural brands. So I love brands like Tropic Skincare is a really good brand. It's online only, I think. Green People, Sukin, Antipodes, Neil's Yard is lovely, Ren. And then cleaning brands, you've got things like Method, Bio-D, Attitude. So there's lots of brands to be used out there. And as I said, the prices are coming down a bit because there's more brands out there. And kind of thinking about ditching things like air fresheners. I mean, let's just use, you know, plugins. Ideally, we don't use those things because I still haven't found, things like plugins that would be natural. Regular commercial candles will have chemicals, so you could switch to natural ones, but they do tend to be more expensive. That is the only problem. And also perfumes. So perfumes are full of these chemicals, unfortunately. So I've just started using Aesop brand. I thought they were just skincare. I didn't realize they did perfumes, but they have some lovely scents. Yes, they're more expensive. Well, they can be more expensive. Some regular perfumes are very expensive. But it's just worth it because I know I'm not spraying chemicals all over my skin and breathing it in as well every day. So another important concept to understand, which I won't go into in this episode, but it's the concept of estrogen metabolism and clearance. So this is basically the process of our body breaking down, also known as metabolizing, the estrogen molecules that we've used. And that's basically happening all day, every day. So once an estrogen molecule has traveled around the body, which, as I said, happening all the time, doing all of the important things that it has to do, like acting on your brain and your mood and your skin and your bones and your heart, we then need to lose that molecule. So it basically goes through a process in the liver after we use it and it does all its jobs, it goes down to the liver. The liver acts on it by way of two big processes that go on in the liver that break it down, and they basically like tears it apart, if you like, and makes it ready, like packages it up ready to leave the body permanently. But the way it leaves the body permanently is through a bowel movement. So once the liver's done its breaking down work and packaged it up, it sends it to the gut. It then sits in the gut waiting for you to have a bowel movement to clear it out permanently. So if we're constipated or we just don't have a very healthy gut environment, we can risk having that broken down estrogen get reabsorbed back into the body, and that increases our overall estrogen load and increases those symptoms of heavy periods, painful flow, fibroids, mood swings, headaches, breast pain, for example. So we really want to be supporting the liver to do its job at breaking it down efficiently, and we want to be supporting the gut as well. So I'll dive into that in more detail in the next episode. But just for the purpose of this episode, just know that our ability to do this plays a role in how impactful those estrogen spikes are symptoms-wise. It makes the highs higher and that sort of estrogen dominant picture more intense and the symptoms more intense. So we want to be supporting the liver to do its job. We want to be supporting the gut because it is that final step of clearing out used estrogen. So I will talk about that more in a future episode. So I hope today's episode has been helpful and that you've learned something new, you've taken something actionable away from it. And as ever, I'd always like to say, I put it in the notes all the time, but just, I'm sure you don't all read the notes, but I really would encourage questions. I'd love to hear from you guys. I'd love to hear any questions that you've got about various episodes, any ideas that you've got or suggestions you've got for topics that you might want me to cover, guests that you might want me to speak to, just anything at all that you'd like to say. I'd love to hear from you. So in the show notes, you'll find my email address or my Instagram where you can private message me on Instagram, so let me know. And I'd really love to hear from you. And the other thing that would just be so helpful is if you are happy to leave a review, preferably a 5-star review on Spotify if that's where you're listening, or Apple Podcasts if that's where you're listening. Apple Podcasts also allows you to leave a written review, so if you have a minute to just spare to write a little sentence, that would also be great. Thank you for that in advance if that is what you do. So thank you for listening. Bye-bye. If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.